You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Several times a week, Laura will turn to me after we get into bed and say those six little words I've been waiting to hear all day. Can I read something to you? Once I've said yes, she reaches for an item from her very cluttered nightstand and proceeds to bring that book, blog post, poem, essay, or article to life with her voice. I hope you enjoy listening to her read as much as I do. Here's this week's selection from Laura's nightstand.
Hi, so as Scott said, this is on my nightstand and I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins. And today we are so excited to bring you our third anniversary contest winner. This is the essay contest that we ran to celebrate our third anniversary in April. And we are bringing you our winning essay now. It was written by Mia Idrisi. Hi, Mia. Scotty says hi, too. So let me tell you a little bit about Mia. This is her bio that she sent. Mia Idrisi grew up in Seattle, Washington, in a home filled with gifted artists, musicians, and other emotionally challenged people. In her early 20s, she moved to New York, determined to be the next Bette Midler. After 10 years at large on the streets of the 1980s New York, a couple of trips to rehab, a few years spent back in Seattle, long enough to get married and divorced, she finally met her person, her husband Phil. Together, they spent the last 15 years having a blast working in divergent parts of the entertainment industry here in Los Angeles, with a litany of ridiculous, sometimes glamorous, sometimes dangerous adventures. Her stories are winding their way into a memoir that is currently incubating. Being the only 16-year-old at an EST training weekend in 1980 full of hundreds of adults is but one of her curious life experiences. And you can find Mia after you listen to this essay. If you want to look her up on social media, you can find her at Mia Alicia Idrisi is a writer on Instagram, and Mia Loves Lenny on Twitter, and Mia Idrisi, that's I-D-R-I-S-S-I, on LinkedIn. And so one of the reasons that we chose this essay is because it is, like our poetry winner, a really great example of an only one story. And so here we go. Without further ado, here is Est by Mia Idrisi. One day, my brother Spider calls from New York and tells us that he's registered and paid for all of us to take EST training here in Seattle. I'm like, the what training? Spider and my older brother Casey both live in Manhattan, and they've become simultaneously involved in both Amway and EST since Kim's death. They both get hyper-passionate, talking incessantly about both. Spider, a former dancer slash actor turned astrologer slash tarot card reader, and Casey, a one-time master chef turned jack of all whatever labor I can trade for a place to live kind of guy, both have a propensity for drinking the multi-level marketing Kool-Aid. And while Est isn't an obvious pyramid scheme, it is their latest obsession, and they won't be satisfied until we and everyone they know have been through what they've deemed is a life-altering training. If you tell two friends and they tell two friends, I mean, I think you see what I'm getting at. Est is described on Wikipedia like this. The purpose is to create a space for people to participate in life, to experience true space and freedom. Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Over two consecutive weekends, roughly 250 people over four full days are given the opportunity to experience a one-of-a-kind personal breakthrough. It's the quintessential 70s pop psychology trend of the times, perfectly suited for the me generation. And with the cost of $400, it's not cheap. So we all feel obligated to attend since Spider has paid the hefty fee for us all to go. Our attendance is staggered over a few months, with Mom going first in September, then my dad in November. To be honest, I didn't notice much of a difference in either of them post-Est, but I'll give them credit. They've both always been more open-minded than most. I just don't think my middle-aged grieving parents are going to change or snap out of the unbearable pain they're in by attending two fatiguing weekends, ingesting psychobabble and buzzwords. It's January, and it's my turn. I'm feeling more unsure and anxious about participating than ever, but my parents think that given what we've all been through since Kim's death, it won't hurt and might possibly be helpful. Their concern about my well-being and my future is palpable. My mom drives me to the first day of training, but on the way she tells me to listen for an announcement they're going to make regarding transportation. Because there is limited parking, participants are encouraged to volunteer to give rides to others who live in proximity to each other. I am shocked at what I think she's suggesting, and I beg her, please, please, please don't make me ask anyone for a ride, Mom. Please come pick me up. I get that she doesn't want to drive me back and forth, but really? She thinks this is a good idea and will be good for me? I feel backed into a corner because she isn't interested in negotiating. I am so unsettled with this expectation, not only for having to ask for a ride among all these adults that I don't even know, but because when the time comes to find out who is offering to carpool, I get paired up with the only person who lives in Rainier Beach, an older gentleman who volunteers to be my driver for the duration of training. And while it's quite gracious of him, and he never does or says anything untoward, the unsettling part is that both he and the crushed velour interior of his carmine red Cadillac evoke an aroma that I can only describe as an obnoxious mix of high karate and sweat socks. It's sensory overload beyond anything I've ever known, and while I try to smile and behave politely, the smell keeps me in a constant state of nauseousness. The entire training is held in the enormous and drafty gymnasium of Seattle University, where there are several rows of chairs set up facing a stage. The days all start promptly at 7 and end whenever the instructors deem it's time for us to go home, which is never confirmed in advance, and every day goes well past midnight. But you're supposed to rise and shine and be back the next morning on time, no exceptions. As I do my best to pay attention, I can't help but check my watch constantly with an intense disappointment that the day is just not moving fast enough. It's a lot of sitting and listening to, for me, feel like boring lectures with occasional questions from the participants that lead us down through various paths, depending on what a fellow attendee wants help with. But the days are just way too long, and all I can hear are instructors regurgitating a lot of buzzwords and catchphrases that not only go over my head, but that I feel ridiculous introducing into my teenage vocabulary. We also engage in several smaller group sessions that I do my best to appear willing to participate in. But so far in my life, the main story or issue I have is that my brother's suicide occurred 6 months prior to my being here. And while it's always heavy on my heart, I don't have the slightest idea how to talk about what I'm feeling to myself, my family, let alone to people I don't know. I am literally the youngest and the only teenager in the room, and I'm understandably withdrawn and shut down. The grief over losing my brother is still buried under the trauma of how he died. I've been through a lot of family drama over the past few months, and as a result, I have both a melancholy and a maturity that makes me feel different than my peers. But I'm still a kid, a lost kid in a room full of hundreds of adults, wondering what the hell I'm doing here. Why do I have to do this? And what do they expect I'm going to get out of this exactly? The most challenging exercises are the role plays, where we are seated across from one other person and are guided to communicate using honest and transparent communication, creating trust with our partner. It feels incredibly awkward for me to do this face-to-face, eye-to-eye. It just feels so stupid. I can't imagine that the adult woman I am paired with is any more comfortable working through her stuff with a 16-year-old. It just isn't a good match for either one of us, but we soldier through it. They always provide us with a continental breakfast and a brown bag lunch on site, but for dinner they encourage us to carpool and go out to one of the nearby restaurants with some of our fellow attendees. The first night, I'm invited to join a small group to go to Taitung for some Chinese food. As soon as we get to the restaurant, I excuse myself and use a payphone to call my mom. I plead with her to come and get me. I just don't want to do this, not for one more minute. She calmly tells me to stick with it, that I'll be fine. Although I'm sobbing, I tell her that I'll suck it up, and I go back to the table. When we get back from dinner, I'm not exactly sure what's causing the wave of sickness that hits me. Probably a combination of the egg rolls and my resistance to being here. But either way, I'm a hot mess. One of the many ground rules is that you cannot get up and go to the bathroom except during scheduled periodic breaks. Let's just say that my need to barf isn't lining up with our designated times to use the bathroom. All of the exits are guarded by facilitators, and when I try to leave, looking green and wildly indicating that I'm about to be sick, I'm strongly encouraged to go back and sit down, that I'll find a paper bag under my chair. And if I need to throw up, well, that's what the bag is for. Through the tears of defeat and discomfort, I surrender and return to my seat, where I promptly grab my trusty bag and relieve myself in front of everyone, of not just my dinner, but of every bit of the pent-up frustration I've been carrying around inside of me for the last 24 hours. And once again, I can look forward to the drive home in the Cadillac with the smells from hell, wondering what I did to deserve this. The week between my training weekends feels particularly isolating because other than my parents and brothers who have done it, and all who are 11 to 41 years older than me, they cannot relate to how I'm processing the experience as a teenager doing EST. I don't know how to talk or explain what all of this is to my peers. I don't have a single friend who has been in therapy, let alone have a clue what EST even is. And while I have no idea what I'm going to do when this is over, I'm determined to finish and then put it all behind me. The last 6 months of my life have been one overstimulating set of circumstances after another. Suicide, disclosures of affairs and incest, family members cutting each other off with threats of violence, should boundaries not be respected. My parents in a state of deep sorrow that makes my home life feel unbearable. My father can't stop crying and is drinking again after 10 years abstinent. And my mother must be shedding tears in private because I've only seen her cry one time since my brother's death, but her sadness is palpable. Spider and Casey are convinced that EST is the thing that will fix us and put us all back together. My pain feels like it's being outsourced, and I don't think it's working for me. It's the last night of EST, and everyone is all abuzz about getting it. After roughly 60 hours with these people, all I hear is a lot of chatter. I got it. Did you get it? Have you got it? And truthfully, I don't know if I got it. At some point, I just acquiesce and say sure to get them to shut up about it. My experience of EST isn't a complete bust. On the last day, one of the instructors in mid-monologue about something stops abruptly and calls me out in front of everyone. You know what, young lady? When you first arrived, you looked like you were about 40 years old. Right now, you look like the sweet 16-year-old that you are. You're already showing up lighter. He's not wrong. I stopped feeling like a carefree teenager the day my brother died. When EST officially ends, I do have a sense of accomplishment for having completed it, despite the many moments of unease. I'm now an unemployed high school dropout with EST under my belt. Look out, world. I'm coming in hot.
And what another great episode, honey.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I love working with you.
Aw.
Yeah. So, hun, we have some Patreon shout-outs for the month of May.
Yes, we do.
All right, and some recurring ones. So
yeah, so excited.
Have? Yeah.
I'm going to lead off with Cute Booty Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. Right,
that sounds familiar.
Right, Cute Booty Lounge was a concept born in Kelly Nishimoto's garage in 2004. We love Kelly.
Yep, there's an episode about that.
But she was looking to make pants that embrace a woman's curves, particularly the booty.
Oh, she nailed it.
Oh, yeah, and that she wanted them to be polished enough so that you could like wear them out and about. Mm-hmm. She has these amazing scrunch booty pockets. That's her signature. And Cute Booty Lounge is made for women and by women right here in the USA. The company is incredible. It's female and minority owned. So go to cutebooty.com in our show notes and order yours today. I wear mine all the time. And what do people always say to me, hon?
Cute booty.
Cute booty.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So the next one we have is the How to Do the Pot podcast.
I know. This is a great one for us, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Particularly for us.
But we are so happy to have this podcast.
Yes, we are.
Sponsors.
And speaking of women, because we talked about female and minority owned mm-hmm. for Kelly, did you know that 3 out of 4 women in the U.S. have legal access to weed? But most women still have a lot of questions.
As we all do.
So How to Do the Pot podcast is demystifying cannabis for women. Every week, you can listen to fun, short episodes that answer all the questions women secretly Google about cannabis.
And it's hosted by the fabulous
Ellen Scanlon.
Yes, Ellen yeah. Scanlon, who was a previous guest on this show.
Right. So mm-hmm. How to Do the Pot shares women's personal stories and advice from experts to help with solutions around stress, sleep, sex, and chronic pain, with the goal of helping women feel more confident in their choices about cannabis.
Awesome.
If you're ready for practical advice about weed by women for women, listen to How to Do the Pot podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I love the name.
Mm-hmm. And it's also in the show notes.
Uh-huh. Who else do we have?
We have Mercedes Cusick, LMFT.
LMFT.
Right. So she's a licensed trauma therapist and certified EMDR therapist. Which means, you were going to ask, right? What does that mean?
Honey, what does that mean?
She has advanced training in complex and developmental trauma. Mm. And she's doing something pretty incredible. It's called EMDR Intensives.
This is pretty unique.
Yeah. So there's a concierge curated program. It's just for you. EMDR Intensive range from half a day to several days and are the equivalent, get this, of 2 to 5 months of weekly therapy.
Wow. They're cramming it in there, huh?
And now some people may ask, what is EMDR? And you're going to explain it, right?
Yes. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. By simply stimulating both sides of the brain, it helps to heal the brain and desensitizes traumatic or upsetting memories. It's also been used effectively to treat a wide range of mental health problems such as PTSD, depression, anxiety, grief, and phobias.
Yeah, and so what's so cool about these intensives is that they allow you to unpack the past and the pain without having to deal with everyday stuff like carpooling or morning meetings and presentations.
And this intensive format decreases treatment time and saves you a considerable amount of money in the long run.
Exactly. So if you want to start feeling better now, and why wouldn't you?
Mm-mm.
Then EMDR intensives are the way to go. And California residents, you can click the link in our show notes to find the link to Mercedes Cusick's website and book your EMDR intensive today.
That's right. Don't live with the pain of the past traumas any longer than you have to. Mercedes Cusick, LMFT, licensed trauma therapist, is located in Woodland Hills, California. Her website is www.mercedescusick, that's CUSICK.com.
Yeah, good spelling again, hon.
I tried.
And then last but definitely not least is Kathleen Hahn.
Still shouting out Kathleen out there in the East Coast.
Yeah, well, she is still supporting us and we are so grateful. Hi, yeah, Kathleen.
Kathleen, hey.
It's your shout out.
Thanks for being a shout out fan and a Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't even really have any thing to promote right now, but she just wants to support us, and she, you know, is a patron every month, and we so appreciate you.
Yeah, we're grateful to all you patrons for helping us to bring you more and more content and storytelling.
Right, this show is supported by you, so it is our pleasure to shout you out.
On My Nightstand is a special segment of the Only One in the Room podcast. Today's episode was produced by Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, and executively produced by Christina Barcy, who we call Barcy. Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible, brand new Only One interview, and every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading from something that I love. If you have an Only One in the Room story or a piece of writing that you'd like to share, please submit it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.